Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron, time and time again.
Hello and welcome to the Moving Iron Podcast Markets with Chip Nellinger. Chip, how you doing this morning?
Hey, doing real well. How you doing, Casey?
Oh, man, good to be back in the U.S. here, man. Had a couple technical difficulties between both of us trying to run each other down the last couple weeks here, so it's good to talk to you again, man.
Yeah, back in the USA.
Yeah, they let me through customs, so I'm surprised, but they let me back in the country, so things are looking up. So I was going to have to spend the night in the Denver airport trying to get through customs there, but no, they let me right through, so good times.
That's a good thing. When they let you back in, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. So, all right, man, lots of stuff going on here. You know, we got the China talks where we're going to, you know, not escalate anything, but nothing came out of it, so it's kind of back to where we've been, you know. But we're still, you know, we're talking, so we've got 2 weeks away, right? That's how it works, right? Every time they start a new conversation, we got 2 weeks till the deal gets struck. So that whole thing is going on. And then we've got on last Friday here that crop report came out and planted acres report came out that seemed to throw the market into a bit of a whirl here. So talk about that report a little bit and kind of give me your opinion on what you see happening there.
Yeah, well, that's quite a controversy, it appears. It seems like there's nothing easy when it comes to these acreage reports. It's kind of been my hot button for many years. If there's one thing that they need to fix, in my opinion, it's the way, the timing and the way they do acreage reports. But, you know, kind of like you, that I sit by my phone every day waiting for Washington to call me and get my advice on this, and it doesn't ring. So
yeah.
I'm just another of millions of mouths and voices that go unheard. But yeah. So regardless, we had the June acreage report. What makes it even tougher this year is the, you know, historic late plantings that we had. So this report was data collected the first half of June. Farmer survey data. And, you know, at that point in time, especially the Eastern Corn Belt, we really didn't know. I mean, the first 10 days of June was just nothing but rain. I mean, literally every day. So, the controversy or the discrepancy here is, number one, they came out at 91.7 million acres of corn. That was down a million acres from the March report. The bean number was 80 million acres. That was way lower than expected. Something like almost 5 million below the March report. So you combine those together, it was less acres. So the immediate snap reaction was that this report included prevent plant acres, although there was nothing specifically on the surveys that asked about prevent plant. It is simply, what do you intend to plant? How many acres of corn and how many acres of beans? So the market's quick knee-jerk reaction was that, you know, there's way less. The intentions on corn were going to be way higher, and the prevent plant's in there, and we're going to end up at 91.7. That's not the way I read it, and the issue is that we may not know till the January crop report, realistically. But they are going to resurvey. Not farmer survey. They go out and actually take objective, they physically look at sections of ground and say, all right, what is this planted corn? Is this planted beans? Is it not planted at all? And so that's good. That data is going to be released on the August crop report. So we've got 2 months to wait for that. My take on it is this. It couldn't possibly have taken into account all the prevent plant. Couldn't possibly have, because that decision was still being made at that point in time. And there was a lot of corn that was planted post June 15th after that data was collected. I'm not saying it didn't include some of the pre-treatment plant, but so that's the discrepancy. The market has had a huge swing lower. I don't know what we are, almost 40 cents off the highs in corn here. All really in a massive range that on Friday's day, just from low to high, one of the biggest ranges in corn we've had in years and years and years. And so that's the discrepancy. That's the fight right now. One side of the market thinks it's all going to be fine and, you know, rain makes grain now and 91.7 million acres got planted and we're going to have plenty of corn, no shortage. I'm probably in the other camp thinking that, okay, 91.7 is the start, still going to have several million acres off of that, and there's just no way on God's green earth that we're going to hit a 166 yield, and that yield number has yet to come down, and we're still going to have a really tight carryout. So all that means is you better get ready for some extreme volatility going forward.
Yeah.
And not that we haven't seen it already. So this thing is just really frustrating because it eventually you would think that the RMA, farmers have to certify their acres on by July 15th. How many acres of corn, how many acres of beans. They also have to turn in, you know, how many acres of prevent plant they're going to take. So at a certain point in time here, come August, September, the RMA, which is, you know, division of the USDA, should be able, in my brain, simple brain, country boy, simple math, should be able to push a button on the computer and tell you, did a half acre, how many acres of corn were planted, how many acres of beans were planted, how many acres of prevent plant were there. Unfortunately, the division of the USDA that puts out the crop reports and the acreage reports, it don't really communicate very well, if at all, with the RMA part of the USDA.
Shocker.
So right. It's not as simple as what you'd think, and we're going to fight this. My point is, it's frustrating now. It's going to be frustrating until the January crop report when they put out what is the, they won't change it after that. This is what was planted. This is what was harvested. This is what the yield was.
Yeah.
So we got several months of fun and games here.
Okay. So how are crop tours are going to start tapping here pretty quick? You know, you're going to start looking at the pro farmer crop tour and those kind of things are going to start making their way through the countryside here before too long. And when they get out to my neck of the woods out here, you know, we've got corn that's 2 foot tall that should be 4.5 foot tall. And I think we're going to be pushing a tight frost window this year, tighter than we've ever pushed before. I'm anticipating just looking at long-term forecasts and, you know, everybody can sit there and say nobody can predict the weather in the next 5 minutes, much less three months out. But these weather models that they put out here over the last 30 days, all through the spring, all through the summer, have been fairly accurate as far as, you know, overall temperature goes and moisture and those kind of things go. So what I'm seeing right now is July is supposed to be cooler than normal, which isn't good. It tells me that we're going to be, you know, pollinating corn sometime in August instead of in July, which I guess what I'm getting at here is I think that we're probably 30 days behind schedule. And, I mean, it's a field-by-field thing, you know, obviously. But you take a look, we'll see what's out there. It's 30 days off. So when you start these crop tours and stuff that are going to start coming out, that's going to have a huge effect on the market, when especially with the traders when they're looking at it and they're going to say, hey, look, we're 30 days behind schedule. Average frost dates are X. We're going to be putting this stuff right up to the frost date to make this crop happen. You got to think that's going to start making some effect on the overall marketplace. I mean, am I wrong there, or do you think is that a pipe dream?
Well, it's tough. It's really tough. It will eventually, but the marketplace. You have to understand all the participants in the market, right? There's a huge speculative, you know, part of the market, right? Funds. A lot of these funds are, you know, in Chicago or New York City or London or Hong Kong. Right. They trade technically they listen to the fundamentals, but they don't know the fund. They don't know the agronomy side. And so the market is just like the spring weather, right? Your farmers are saying, like, what is going on? Why isn't corn rallying? We're, you know, it's got our 2/3 of our yearly rainfall in 3 weeks, you know, and there's no way we're going to plant on time.
Right. Yep.
It just took forever. Eventually, you are right. It will have an effect. But in the meantime, it is just really hard for the market to wrap its arms around what is really going on in the field. And they kind of take an assumption of everything's going to be okay until you prove to us that it's not. And which kind of circles back around into these crop condition reports. Every Monday, we get a crop condition report. And it's subjective. For one, there's really very little correlation between crop conditions and final yields. It's kind of a beauty contest.
Right.
And that's a whole other issue, right? So you drive by some fields out here. They look okay, you know. They've kind of hit some nitrogen. They're growing, you know, they're maybe a foot tall. And you're like, oh, that's a pretty good-looking field of corn. But it doesn't. Crop conditions don't take into account where we're at on the calendar, right? You look right. at it, it's great if it were May 18th, May 20th, May 23rd.
Right.
It's July 2nd.
Right.
And yeah. so, and like you said, it's all in there, right? Are we going to beat a frost? I don't know. That's going to be a race against the clock. Are we even going to get there? Right. So we're way behind out here on growing degree units.
Yeah.
Now it's been pretty hot for the last few days, but you don't 5 days and 90 degrees doesn't catch you up, you know, like 200 growing degree units, you know, in the snap of a finger.
Right.
And then last half of July here is supposed to be back cool like it has been. So there's all kinds of questions out there agronomically. I don't think you've even begun to see the problems. It just seems like when you plant that late in that poor conditions, it just starts the cycle of everything. You know, number one, how much nitrogen did we lose with all the rain? Number two, how much more money are guys going to throw at this thing? Are they going to throw the pocketbook at it to try to, you know, push it along? Or how many millions of acres got put in just for crop insurance? All the compaction issues, you know, plant health. You have poor plant health, now all of a sudden you start having disease and insect issues. It's just like a comedy of errors when it starts this late, and we haven't even begun to see the final effects of that. So I agree with everything you said. It's just it may take the market a while to figure out what we intuitively know if we're out there driving by fields and walking fields, and you know the problems are there. The market can't grasp just yet. And I think that's what's happening in beans, right? They look and say, well, you know, the USDA saying we're going to have a 49.5 bushel yield. And I mean, the market has no clue on that. There's areas of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio right now that they can't plant. I mean, it literally rains every 3 days. There's no rain in the forecast, you know, maybe 20% chance of, and this big old afternoon thunders cloud comes through and, you know, dumps 7/10 of an inch of rain in 15 minutes with 60 mile an hour winds and some hail. And it comes across the same path. So there are literally areas that, I mean, I personally think there's going to be a couple million acres of prevent plant beans, but the market can't grasp its arms around that because it's never happened. You know, we've right. always got the beans in the ground. Well, yeah. This is maybe the one year that we're not going to. And there's just no way. I will take a serious bet on an under 49.5. So, You use 80 million acres of beans, like the USDA told us last Friday, and take 4 or 5 bushels off the national average yield, and all of a sudden you don't have a billion bushel carryout, you have a 450 million bushel carryout. But the market isn't, the market's just still thinking, you know, life's great. These farmers are doing a great job. We're going to get these beans in and planted July 3rd, and, you know, they're going to be 70 bushels. In reality, they might be 15 bushels if they beat a frost. Right. In the areas, you know, that are the wettest. So the market just doesn't get agronomically what's going on. It will eventually, but it may take some time. And, you know, we're going to have a real bumpy roller coaster ride along the way. So the straight up move was fun and easy, but now it's going to just get really frustrating and chew everyone's money up. Whether you're long or short, you're going to be in for a long summer.
Yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of, that's just crazy. So, all right, so wheat harvest has started. It's been going for the last couple weeks, you know, further south you get up here, southern eastern Colorado, and over into Kansas, looks like they're firing up the combines, getting ready to cut some wheat over there. So, what's the effect on the wheat market with all the rain that we've seen here late and some of these cool temperatures when it was time to start heading wheat out? So what are you seeing happen right now in the marketplace, and how is that affecting what you see in the overall markets?
Yeah, you've had a little bit of everything in this wheat market. So far, yields have been reported, you know, better than expected. So I think we have some really strong yields out there in some areas. I don't know if those very wettest areas have quite been tested yet to get a feel for, you know, what some of those massive rains are like, kind of on the eastern side, you know, like Right. Eastern Oklahoma, mm-hmm. eastern Kansas, you know, that area, if we have a real good feel for that yet. But generally, you know, the further west, the reports are pretty good on yields. That's been pressuring us a little bit. You've had some really hot, record hot temperatures in parts of Europe, France. So there's a little concern maybe about their wheat crop there. But generally speaking, yields have been pretty good. That's pressured us a little bit. The funds are now out of this massive short position that they've had for literally 3+ years. Got long, and now after last Friday and yesterday, probably back to an even, maybe slightly short position. So a lot of this is going to have to do with the funds. Some talk about next year, looking out ahead. They've taken some of the carry out of this market that was in there. And, you know, are we high enough to stimulate the acres that we need? And which is a whole other issue, right? You hit on earlier. We're not going to, I mean, we literally are at least 4 weeks behind here, if not five. And that could slip more if we don't start getting, you know, some consistent warm days. And so are we even going to plant, you know, in some of these areas? I know over here we don't really count on wheat, but I don't know. I mean, if you don't literally start picking corn until the 1st or the 5th or the 8th of November, pretty quickly you're going to run out of, you know, your window to plant wheat. And so that hasn't even hit the market yet either. Our price is high enough to stimulate acreage. There's a lot of things going in the wheat market, but first and foremost is this big harvest we have. Got to get through that, and it looks like yields are pretty good, but it's such a world market, and wheat is going to be a big follower to corn. If corn has another run higher, that'll help, you know, drag the wheat market along with it. So it's not as easy as it seems that, oh, big crop, we're just going to puke back down to the low and put new contract lows in wheat. There's a lot of other factors in there that may help cushion a little bit of a blow from a big crop here.
Yeah, that's when I was in Ukraine, it was... You know, the crops looked pretty good. I mean, the wheat looked pretty good. They'd cut some stuff over there, but it was hot. It was hot, like 95 degrees. When some of the northern edge of the country, it was still pretty green. So it's not necessarily a good time to have those kind of temperatures pumping through there. Plus, what's happening in Russia with some drought issues they're having over there, and obviously Australia's become a drought freaking economy.
Yeah, that was a big area of heat in that you know, European and Black Sea area. Mm-hmm. I mean, I way over 100 in France. I mean, they're talking record highs. They have records a long ways in that part of the world. So
yeah,
you know, it was hot.
Yeah, it got pretty warm. Okay, so cattle complex. Take a look at that. Hog market is just it kind of turned back into the little engine that could, but it's not getting very far. So there's still some struggles there. We had a run up there, and I kind of thought after the whole Mexico UMCA thing kind of got somewhat calmed back down, there'd be some more positive stuff there in hogs. But here of late, it just doesn't seem like they can get some traction they need.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a head scratcher there for sure. A lot of stuff going on. We had a hogs and pigs report, quarterly hogs and pigs report last week. We kind of got through that pretty well. Some big numbers in certain areas, you know, different weight classes. They break that down to like 6 or 8 different categories. So a couple of the numbers were a little on the high side, and we are expanding, but the market knew that. That's probably the biggest issue of why we're keeping the lid on prices. It seems like a never-ending expansion in pork production here domestically. So that's keeping a little bit of a lid. We did see a pretty good reaction yesterday to this China news. You had two things, actually. Over the weekend, there was a story out in the financial, I think it was a Reuters story, but don't quote me on that, but it's out in all the financial sectors, of the reality of African swine fever in China is probably twice as bad as what initially thought. Up to half their breeding stock is gone. So it's a bad deal. That probably gave us some support. And then, you know, the resumption, or at least the pause in the trade war here. We had a pretty good day yesterday in hogs. Some of those deferreds were, you know, close to limit up. And maybe starting to turn the corner here a little bit. China's still taking pork. They've had a couple-week delay here, but they still are regularly in our export sales for taking pork. And so eventually I think we'll catch some traction here and see some rallies in the hog market. It might come at weird times. Usually we're rallying, you know, into July and August, and then you fall off into the fall. Because of this China thing, it may throw off the normal cycle, and, you know, we're kind of weak here in a period where we should be seeing some strength into July, and maybe the strongest market comes in the fall and winter, which would be really odd for the hog market. So I think that you're going to be well supported as long as China continues to fight African swine fever and take U.S. pork products. I think there's going to be the potential to rally this thing, and possibly sharply. Cattle are just another story. They're frustrating as well, and they've had a big break here really over the last couple of months, and the funds had I think near record long position. They're pretty well out of that. We're in a new month, new quarter. We're greatly discounted from where the cash market is on these deferreds, and I think that you got a fair amount of buying underneath of us that will support the cattle market, but we need to see the cash market get up and rally a little bit, which there's some hints of that finally starting to happen now. I think you got limited downside in cattle. That's just due to the fact that some of these deferred contracts are way under where cash has been. And if you can kind of see a little bump higher and maybe get back up into the 116, 118, 120 cash range, you could see a nice little rally in cattle, but we're probably pretty fairly priced. I don't know that you have to go run into, you know, 130, 140. I don't know that you got to see the bottom fall of cattle and go down to 85 or 90. You could probably see a range of, you know, this being on the low side, you know, low 100, 102, 105 on the low side, and maybe 115, 118 on the high side, and maybe be in that range for a little while here. And that probably would be the best of both worlds. But corn price is going to have a big run on that. They've had a real negative effect on feeders. And, you know, that's the one thing that I think cattle feeders are really taking advantage of, this break in corn prices, getting some stuff locked in at what maybe could end up being a bargain here when it's all said and done, especially if we continue to have problems with corn yields going into harvest.
Yep. Yeah, there's a fair amount of folks out there right now that are scrambling to for silage, that are buying corn for silage. That's quite a distance from where they would normally buy it from, just trying to find those fields to buy. So it's going to be interesting to see how the cattle market and the corn market, and have that correlation, what that looks like here long term. So that's
help, you know, that they relaxed some of the silage haylage issues on prevent plant acres and allowing farmers to go in there and being able to harvest, you know, some silage off of some of those cover crops and other crops. So that will help the cattle guy. And that was, you know, probably a good thing, a big picture. So it'll at least expand the silage part a little bit and maybe allow for more available feed access. May have to, like you said, go further away. I know a lot of guys over here in Illinois and Indiana are going to start doing that. Well, we don't have a lot of cattle over here. We have some dairies, but nothing like you guys in the Western Corn Belt. So going to be some transportation, logistical issues and getting hay and silage where it needs to be this fall.
That trucking's cheap too. It's really, really cheap to get something trucked. So.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All right, Chip. Talk about it.
Yeah, especially in Illinois, you know. We just started paying 19 cents more a gallon for gas yesterday, so that's the privilege of being in Illinois, Casey.
Yeah. Well, you guys got
to fill up. If you ever need to come to Illinois for anything, you just better fill up before you get here. Maybe carry a...
Bring a gas can.
Pull along, pull along a trailer, a tanker. Mm-hmm. Good deal.
To get across the state, Illinois. Yeah. Well, you guys have all the fun there, so, you know, all the good things great. Going over there. All right, Chip, talk about it all the time. Folks working on a plane, and they got one they want to put together, and they want to have you check it out. How would they do that?
Yeah, just give us a call. 309-550-7213 is our office. I think that, the last probably four trading days illustrates the importance of having a plan, and the market's going to do things that you might not expect it or that you think it's impossible to do, and sometimes it's got a mind of its own. So this volatility is a good thing, really. It's if you have a plan and you can maneuver through it. If you don't have a plan, man, it is it's hairy out there. So we'd love to chat with you.
Yeah, it's definitely a you need a good map that you can kind of track your way across, and having that plan is what's going to get you there. So, well, folks, make sure you guys tune into Global Ag Network. Check out, obviously, here, Moving Iron Podcast. Check out Dryline Farmer Podcast with Brent Carlson and Landon over there. And also check out Angie Setzers, who will be here on Fridays. Her podcast, Girls Talk Ag. And also check out a new one just came out, Hot Rod Farmer Podcast. He has a podcast called Idle Chatter. So it's a good one to check out. And it's if you're looking at how to kind of get some tips on how to repair your stuff and just general maintenance on your farm equipment, check it out. It's a good one to check out. So, Chip, till next time, have a good one. We'll talk again next week.
Okay, sounds great.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here.